This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, covering all things Ipswich Town since 2015. My name is Mikey Penty-Smith. This is the flagship show, and today I'm joined by two of Blue Monday's Globetrotters. From Madeira to the Medway in a week, it's Joe Fares. And fresh from a trip to Costa del Felixstowe, it's David Diamond. How are you both? Still basking in the glory of yesterday's performance, I gather.
Yeah, brilliant, wasn't it?
Joe, spoiler alert. Joe's probably still drying out, aren't you, Joe?
Yeah, that was a wet day there, and I made the mistake of taking my poncho off when it looked clear at about 65 minutes and then proceeded to get absolutely soaked for
I heard one or two people say that it was relatively light until about 20 minutes from the end, and then the heavens opened, yeah?
Yeah, the weather, it wasn't really that bad, was it, for most of the game? It was a little bit wet, and then just that last 15 minutes, it just bucketed it down right onto our backs, sort of where we were right at the very top of the stand, just absolutely soaked us.
The problem is that you get there, well, it was raining all day, wasn't it? So you get there with enough time to make sure that you get a decent parking spot and whatever, and then you try and get in a pub, the pubs are all full. So then you just have to queue up to get in the ground. But then once you're in the ground, it's still outside anyway. And then obviously you get to your seat and obviously you're still outside. So there's just sort of no opportunity to warm up.
At least I guess you didn't have to sit, you're away, so you didn't have to sit down on a wet seat. That's even worse, isn't it?
No, Joe refused to sit down. Terrible.
Yeah.
That disabled person behind me could see just fine though.
An eventful journey home, wasn't it? By all accounts, last night.
It was slow at Dartford, but I had my sat nav on, and it took me this route where I literally went into the entrance and exit of Bluewater Shopping Centre to come out.
Oh, I know.
And nipped me on right, sort of then through the centre of Dartford into.
Yeah, I know.
Sort of coming out quite near the tunnel, so I wasn't too bad. But I think anyone who just went straight back up to the 25 and Loosh. Sat there had a very, very slow return. But yeah, I was about 7:45, so it's not too bad.
Oh, he did well.
Yeah, I got home in decent time as well. I think Craig Finbo, who's supposed to be on the podcast, is still stuck in the traffic tunnel on his way home.
It's so just bypassing Chelmsford as we speak, I think. He probably Lovely is, stuff. Actually.
Let's get into the news. And it's been a bumper weekend of football on the telly, hasn't it, lads? It's been really enjoyable. Just saw Nottingham Forest knock Arsenal out of the cup. Great to see. And on Friday night, our very own Tyrese Simpson made his primetime TV debut. He came up against the might of Manchester City. Swindon, I think, made fairly decent account for themselves, but lost 4-1. Now, Simpson didn't see loads of the ball, but a great experience for him all the same, Joe.
Yeah, and he is a boyhood Man City fan, so I think he was even more delighted to play them. And on his Instagram, he's got a photo where he had, I think, Gundogan and De Bruyne shirt from the game, so he was quite happy with that. But yeah, he wasn't able to get in the game as much as possible, but sort of interestingly, the right back who did really well, Kessler Hayden, who's, I think he was the Youth Cup winning captain at Aston Villa, sort of Louis Barry's teammate, has looked really good for Swindon, had a really good game. And I spoke to a Swindon fan who basically said, since that game, Kessler Hayden's now been recalled from his loan and they're probably going to send him higher up the pyramid. So he said when he was walking out the game, he said to his brother, I'm glad. And this is his nickname, Big Daddy Tyrese, didn't have his best game for us because we might have lost him as well as Kane. So I think it's sort of a scant consolation that we probably won't recall him because he didn't show up brilliantly on the national telly, that we might have looked to move him on in his line. But I don't think we'd have done that anyway, but that's what they've done with Kessler Hayden.
Yeah, he was neat and tidy what he had to do, but he was just a bit isolated, wasn't he? And City had a half-decent, side up. I was particularly, I know we're not on this subject, we're talking about Tyrese Simpson. I was particularly impressed with the City young winger. He's a bit tasty, wasn't he?
Cole Palmer, my goodness me.
Yeah, Simpson, you know, what he had to do was neat and tidy, but he was just isolated. It was long periods when he just wasn't in the game, was he?
And I think if you look at his sort of stats for Swindon, that is quite like that. They're a very possession-heavy side, and he's sort of the player that can help bring them up the pitch when he needs to, but he's not massively involved in the game. He's because you're just not when you're that lone striker, and they've got sort of McGurdy sort of playing a bit deeper. But no, he's done really well for Swindon, and their fans are very happy with him. And if he can start another sort of 15, 20 games over the course of the season, we'll be much better for it come the summer.
I mean, you felt for him, really, because, you know, it was crying out to go direct. And Christ, the first two goals, they basically gave them on a plate, didn't they? You know, messing around with the ball on the edge of their box against Man City, for goodness sake, you know. So, yeah, not great from that point of view. But to be fair, Joe's right, they did try and play football. And nice to see him get a goal.
Yeah, definitely. Johnny Williams heavily involved in that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Saw GB today, he was all over that. Yeah,
of course he was. So where did you see GB, Dave? I'm guessing it was at the Gold Star ground for that 1-1 draw.
Nice segue. He was, popped down. Good God, getting into Felixstowe on a Sunday's worse than getting into Ipswich during the week, for goodness sake. Roadworks everywhere, traffic lights everywhere, for goodness sake. But I got there about 10 minutes from the start. Disappointingly, dropped another 2 points, unfortunately. Drew 1-1 and probably overall it was the right result. And I think Portsmouth created a lot. Natasha Thomas scored a really good goal, good sort of brave header, for a good bit of wing play from, I'm not quite sure, but played wide right, but really good wing play, and she nodded it in at the near post. Good finish. Then they scored halfway through the second half, probably 20 minutes to go, free kick. Keeper initially made a good save, and then they were just following it up from an angle, put it in the roof of the net, and then a few half chances after that. Very, very fussy referee, for goodness sake. I think it was like 4 yellow cards, for goodness sake, and mostly for dissent and stuff like that. He was quite fussy, so yeah, not much flow to the game. But yeah, disappointingly, that obviously the last two games after carrying all before them other than the cup match, they've dropped sort of 5 points in the last two games, which, as we know, that the division is so well, there's only one team that we know qualifies for the actual playoff as such. So yeah, definitely a case of 2 points dropped there today.
Indeed, thanks for that. Dave.
Rich was obviously, TWTD for Rich's concise report.
Yeah, that will be available when this podcast is out. So yeah, check that out from our very own Richard Woodward. On Friday, Joe, Insider 247, which I know is one of your favourite websites for your football news, reported that we've made contact with Manchester United over signing young left-back Alvaro Fernandez. TWTD have since reported that this wasn't the case. It's not a surprise to see us linked, first of all, with a Manchester United youngster, is it? And do you think that if we do any business in this transfer window that doesn't include players that we've already got on loan, do you think it will be in that sort of left wing back position?
Yeah, it's just hard to know who's more reliable, the sort of spotty teenager in their bedroom that runs Insider 24/7 or Phil Ham at TWTD. So we'll see how this one plays out. But I'd imagine Phil is probably better connected than the guy linking it there. I don't think it's any surprise. It's such an obvious link, the sort of Man United youngsters. We need a left back. Well, we don't know what's going on with Hayden Coulson at the moment. But the fact he's still here and his loan hasn't been terminated must make you think that they are looking to get him fit and get him back in the side here, whether it's because the financial penalties are too much or McKenna's seen something he likes, or whether they're confident he's going to come back and play games, or whether he's happy with Penny, or Kenlock's going to come back into the fold. We don't really know what is going on, but it's no surprise to see it's a very obvious link, but it doesn't sound like there's anything in it, according to Phil, and the EADT guys haven't sort of picked up at all, even to poo-poo it, so which makes you think that there is nothing in it, because our local journos are generally very good and very sort of on the nose with things, aren't they? So there, but I say it's difficult to know where we're going this window. I'm surprised we haven't seen a deal done yet over the line, bearing in mind it's now the sort of a third of the way through the window, and we were told we were going to be busy, but I do think there's probably an element of needing to get players out as opposed to before we can bring anyone in, just for squad size. Obviously Louis Barry's gone, so that does free up room for another lone player into the squad, because previously we were obviously right up to the limit. Hayden Coulson, as I just said, it sounds like he might be staying. We're obviously working hard on the Walton and Bond deals. Probably the Walton deal more than Bond at the moment, to try and get that one over the line. And I think there's probably a need, or a few weeks ago, James Norwood was on the transfer list and we were looking at a striker, but now James Norwood scored 4 goals in 4 games and has started sort of the last 4 league games. And are we just going to just ride him till the end of the season now, or are we going to look to replace him? I don't know. I think it'd be a very brave manager that sells a striker who's scoring a goal a game at the moment, isn't it? And to bring someone else in. So interesting, though, isn't it, to see where we go?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. A penny for your thoughts, Dave, on the left back position. I love us.
Spoiler alert. I think he had a half decent game. We'll get onto that. I think he had a half decent game yesterday. Maybe if there was a weak player yesterday, because everyone played to such a level yesterday, I thought he was good yesterday. And it certainly, you know, the Danasian experiment, I mean, okay, perhaps I think the back three's now settled where it is, but the Danasian, if you call it experiment, at Charlton was just an absolute unmitigated disaster, wasn't it? I mean, it was the worst game he's had this season by miles, for goodness sake. So, I mean, that's the natural thing at the moment, to have Penny there, natural left back. And it showed with one of the goals yesterday, the advantage of that. But clearly a fit and flight. Maybe, as Joe said, he's seen something, that Coulson's now back training and he's seen something. I mean, if a fit and flying Coulson, as we saw in glimpses, is certainly an upgrade on Penny, one would suggest. So, depending on Coulson's fitness. If he isn't, you would expect we would be looking at perhaps another left back. Obviously, Kenlock's completely out of the frame. You would assume, but then so was Norwood a few games back. But I can't really see Kenlock coming in and having a similar impact defensively as Norwood has had up top, obviously.
Now, I wonder whether there's an area that we might need to look at is sort of centre back, because we've gone to three at the back and you're playing Wolfenden, Edmondson on the left and Danasian on the right. I don't think the way we've played, I don't think you can put a Toto Ensiala into that team just because of how we played on the ball. And no. Cameron Burgess, he's also a player that's sort of struggled a bit on the ball as well since he's come in. But do we need another centre-back who is comfortable on the ball? I'd say probably yes, really. So maybe that's an area of the team. But by the way, we've set up an area of need that's maybe leapfrogged one of the other ones, sort of another body to play there.
Joe, no one else you can see at the moment coming through from the 21s or anything?
Well, I think there's some decent players in there, but I think it's a long way to go for sort of an Albie Armin or an Elkin Baggett to jump ahead of sort of Toto Ensiala, unless Ensiala's a player that we look to get out the door.
It's a little bit of a shame that Ndaba got injured when he did.
He's a player that'd
be a decent option for the back three.
Yeah, maybe that's another option, that you just call him back from Salford and have him here, because I think he's back on the grass, so to speak, now. So
I think he might have even played some minutes yesterday.
I only saw the highlights from the game and I didn't notice him in the highlights, but that's not to say he didn't come on or didn't play. But maybe he's an option. He's probably a lot further ahead of sort of Armin and Baggett initially, and he's a player with that left foot that could come in there and cope on that left hand side. But I say, you've got Burgess, who's a £750,000 signing. Are you going to sort of put Ndaba ahead of him or leave him out there developing? It's an interesting one.
Very much so. Gillingham is also an interesting one. Let's get into that. And in pretty miserable conditions, as we've already mentioned, we travelled to face a Gillingham side without a league win since October. and heard over the tannoy as the teams were coming out that this was Gillingham's first home match day for 6 weeks. Can you imagine six weeks without seeing your beloved town at Portman Road?
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be quite a stretch for us anyway. It'll be virtually a month for us, won't it? Mm. By the time the next home game, but 6 weeks, goodness me, it's like a close season, for goodness sake.
And I was at the game with Joe, so I'll give you a few little insights to what it's like watching a game with Joe Fares. First insight is he still hasn't paid me for the ticket. but yeah, as Joe wrestled his way into his poncho, we got the team news yesterday at 2 o'clock, which wasn't a surprise at all. Christian Walton came in for Victor Hladky in an otherwise unchanged Wickham team. But you noticed early on, Joe, a slight positional change.
Yeah, well, when we set up against Wickham, it was very much a sort of 3-4-3, really, wasn't it? With Norwood on the left-hand side and a Luke on the right-hand side with Bond Central. And those, they were drifting into support as the game sort of naturally opened up a little bit. But it was very different today. Aluko was very much playing as a 10, very central. And Norwood and Bond were a proper strike partnership. So it was a 3-4-1-2 or 3-5-2, whichever way you want to call it. But there was a definite change in the way that Norwood and Aluko were playing and setting up yesterday.
Indeed. And I'll just quickly run through the Gillingham team. I mean, what formation were they playing? They were just sort of sixes and sevens, weren't they? So it's hard to know. But what I've got written down here is 4-4-2. But yeah, it wasn't a 4-4-2. Coming in goal, the young lad on loan from Chelsea, I think, if I remember rightly from the pre-match show. Jackson right back, Aymer and Bennett, the centre backs, Tatonda, the left back, Muzzy Carriol, formerly of Fitz Parish, was left wing. Tucker, Phillips and O'Keefe were the other midfielders. And McKenzie was up in support of Oliver, who was a real handful the last time we went to Priestfields. Certainly wasn't the case on this occasion, though. We started on the front foot, patiently keeping possession for the opening 7 minutes. Joe decides it's a good time to pop down to the toilet. So I'm going to come to you, Dave, to talk us through goal number one as Joe missed it.
Didn't you do that at Burton? Is it when that might have been me at Burton? That
wasn't no, good. No. I did it early on, and maybe it's a sign of good things to come. It was at Birmingham away, Mick McCarthy's first game. Ooh, so first away DJ game under a manager.
I went DJ's goal.
Nipped from an early P and missed DJ Campbell scoring in the 5th minute. This time I waited a few extra minutes and then missed it as well. So maybe it's a good omen for the manager that I missed the first away goal because I'm going to the toilet.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, just it was the start of things to come, as you said. We started off on the front foot really well, knocking it around. The movement was great, wasn't it? It just looked like it had bum. And well, we'll get onto this, but it just started so much better. I think it started with it. I think it was a throw. I think Penny, a throw midway in their half, threw it back to Edmondson. Again, had all the quite a bit of time as was the want yesterday. Sort of spread a crossfield ball to Danasian, was it? And this was good. Danasian, I think, plays a 1-2 with, I think it's Burns wide right. It's just a lovely goal from then on. And Danasian advances with the ball, so edge of the box, plays it into Bon. He knocks it first time wide to Morsey, who basically takes a touch. And this is good. Larrup's in a really good spot across the 6-yard box. And I mean, Norwood just gets across his man first time finish. This is such a simple but really well worked, lovely move, wasn't it?
A lovely move indeed, Joe. And this is what Norwood is good at, isn't it? Is getting across his man. And just I think comes Brenner, alive in Brenner the box, said that Morsey's cross was a shot first up, but if you watch it again, it does look like he meant to
just drills it in an area,
pace,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, great thing. I mean, Norwood's just aggressive, isn't he? He aggressively wants to get to that ball and, you know, get across his man. And that, you're right, that's just it's just a natural goal scorer, isn't he? Certainly at that level.
And yeah, I mean, how frustrating is it when you see a cross like that whiz across the face of goal and you're wondering where the striker is? But Norwood is that, to use the mechanism, a Johnny on the spot. You're back by my side, Joe, as play gets back underway, and it's not long before we've doubled our money.
No, it seemed quite a simple goal, but it's just a ball into Bond's feet, isn't it? And he's got the centre back on him, and he just sort of
absolutely rolls him.
Throws his body one way and goes the other way. And the centre-back goes for a hot dog, so to speak. He has to get a ticket to get back in the ground. He's gone so far from the dummy. And he just runs forward. And from our angle, it looks like he's away. But when subsequently see the replay, still has a lot to do and rolls it to Burns, who just first time just
larrups it.
Davis and larrups it a goal. It looks like it takes a very, very slight nick, but the keeper just, I don't know. I think the keeper should do better there, really. It doesn't.
It goes straight at him, isn't it?
Yeah. He sort of dives out of the way of it. But Burns it hard, strikes it really well. And yeah, 2-0. And from what we've seen so far, it's game over because Gillian was just not at it at all.
That was a funny moment, wasn't it? Was it before we scored when Burns went through and was felled by the invisible tackle?
Yeah, sort of. I think he struck the ball, did he? That was the first or second minute, wasn't it?
That would be a great move. He really manufactured into a brilliant position and he just slips. Which he did more than once, actually. Just lost his foot and there was no contact there. It was quite odd, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't on the extended highlights. I'd actually forgotten about that one, Dave.
It was on iFollow. It was pretty funny.
Brilliant stuff. So yeah, a superb team goal to make it 2-0, Dave. 10 minutes later, we've scored another, which was arguably even better.
This is just ridiculous.
Describe this poetry in motion.
Oh my God, this is just a series of interplay in midfield. To be fair, I think Evans yesterday, Morsey was obviously pushing on a bit more, but Evans could have played yesterday in a smoking jacket and slippers, for goodness sake, couldn't he? For goodness sake. But anyway, they were knocking it around sort of for fun in midfield, really.
Stuart noted in his column that they both had over 100 passes of the ball yesterday.
Is that right? It doesn't surprise me. Goodness me. Ends up with Burns coming off the right, comes inside, and then it's just a thing of beauty, isn't it? He knocks it. I think he just brings it inside off the right, knocks it to... obviously, Aluko, who just then proceeds to play probably the ball of the season so far, certainly, that I've seen an Ipswich player pass. And great from Penny. Penny gets on the overlap, but the ball goes inside the fullback. And Penny is such a great, lovely weighted ball that Penny doesn't even have to break stride and knocks it across. And not the cleanest finish from a goalie ball, I've got to say. But yeah, just put it in a spot. Keeper had no chance. And off we are, 3-0. I mean, all three were just really well, superbly crafted goals, but I suppose about a bit harsh on Ipswich, but you have to say Gillian were awful. But yeah, a great goal and great for Bond to break his 11 game drought, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I don't think from where me and Mikey were watching it, it seemed that the ball from Aluko seemed so easy and so obvious because we were quite high up, sort of like a bird's eye view of it. And it almost like, well, just play the ball. It's so obvious, it's so easy. And he plays it. It's like, oh, well, that was an easy ball. He played it there. And then it's not until you watch it back on the highlights when you see pitch level and it's like the weight and the spot of it and that pitch level. And it's like, no, that was a serious bit of quality. And Penny did well. He sort of got there. He just sort of picked the right option and delivered it perfectly. And I say some of the football we were playing, we really were purring yesterday, but Gillingham were not at it. And I'd sort of said I've never seen a Steve Evans team look like this, really. They just didn't look organized, they didn't look disciplined, and there were times when we were playing well around them, so it was a case that we were making them look bad. But there were other times, like one that came to mind, sort of a ball was high up in the air and it was just dropping onto Lee Evans's head. Evans just nodded the ball to Sam Morsey, and Morsey was just in the middle of four players, and it's like, and no one was within 10 yards of him. And it's just, I don't know, that they just, whether we just totally outfought them. But I thought there was some real, real good interplay in that first half on the ball. And when we defended the ball, we seemed to defend in pairs. So Big V, the sort of striker, he'd try and bring the ball down, and Wolfie would nick it off his toes, but nick it towards Danasian, who was there, and then we'd start playing again, and the other way around, Danasian would nick it, and Wolfie would then just ping it first time into the midfield, and we were sort of hunting in packs off the ball as well as sort of playing well on it.
When you think how that Oliver bullied us last season, right, it was Cook's first game, wasn't it, last season? I mean, it was just absolute chalk and cheese, wasn't it?
Was Wolfenden playing in that game? I think he got bullied a little bit by Oliver last season. I might be misremembering.
Chambers played because Chambers scored, didn't he? I
think. Yeah, Chambers was right back there, wasn't he?
That's a point. Did.
But yeah, fantastic first half, and another thing that it doesn't really make a difference who you're up against. The passing was so crisp, hammering it into each other's feet the whole way through the half. It was a decent pitch at Gillingham, better than Portman Road at the moment, unfortunately. But yeah, just you can only play what's in front of you. But it was obviously a poor team playing badly against
decent team playing well.
Like a decent team playing well.
Just looking at it on the TV, I follow. It was just the pace we seemed to play. We just seemed to be. Yeah, you're right. The ball was fizzing around. There wasn't any. No one was being particularly sort of lackadaisical on the ball as we have seen. Certainly in under Cook, I would say sort of a bit pedestrian at times. We came on here and said it. It was just the sort of pace they were playing at and the general movement, and there always seemed to be an option. It was just.
Well, they didn't seem to be much thinking time either, did they? Everyone knew where everyone was, and Edmondson would burst forward with a ball, and Evans would just drop in and sit behind him. And it's like, bearing in mind, we're sort of talking, and I know without sort of going back to Cook, talking about needing time to gel and getting players there, and we just look infinitely better coached already, don't we?
Yeah,
and,
agree.
And without sort of wanting to go overboard on it, because obviously you don't want to build McKenna up too much, because there's only one way it goes from there, but... Ultimately, we just look a well-coached and well-drilled team, and sort of both on and off the ball, our set pieces sort of defensively were comfortable, bearing in mind the sort of side you're up against. And I know we just, in every phase of play, I thought we were good.
And also, just as we did against Wickham, just playing further up the pitch, for goodness sake. You know, we're playing, you know, now playing football, but in the opposition's half, for goodness sake.
Well, we really squeezed them, because I think that a side that likes to go long ball, we really squeezed them up the pitch. And they, even when Oliver did get the ball, he was nowhere near it.
I particularly noticed that second half. It was first half, so we're defending free kicks. We were just pushing right up, squeezing right up, which we certainly haven't been. So, that's brilliant first half.
And it's obviously easier to do that when you've got a goalkeeper like Walton behind you as well, isn't it?
That helps.
Yeah. So moving into the second half, and Gilliam naturally played a fair bit deeper in the second half, sort of damage limitation from them. We're in absolute cruise control. We continue to play pretty well without creating loads of chances. The impressive Edmondson stepped out from the back and had a decent low shot saved by the Jules keeper. There was quite a few times where players were getting forward about 30 yards out from goal and everyone was calling for a shot, but decent strike from Evanson, not a bad save. Bonner and Norwood are replaced on 71 minutes, Dave, and are warmly received by the away fans. And that's a partnership that's really blossoming, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. As we said, I mean, great to see Bon getting a goal yesterday, but I think McKenna's come out and said, I think I saw something from him in the week where he said, he's not too concerned about Bon not scoring because he works so hard for the team, which he does. He clearly loves being here. It's his hometown club, is well documented. And great to see him back on the score sheet. And they do seem to complement each other really well.
Absolutely. They both work hard, don't they? They both work hard, and they don't give the centre-backs a minute's peace.
Yeah.
On 73 minutes, Gillingham go down to 10 men after the daftest of second bookings from Daniel Phillips. When I was looking at this, I wasn't too surprised to see that he's only 20 years old. This is inexperience, and
they were saying, I think they said on the TV, his record. He's, I think he's I'm not sure how many games he's played.
He's got like
eight yellows and two reds in there, hasn't he, or something ridiculous?
Well, this was I hadn't noticed he'd been booked for the first one. This was he'd basically had a shot that dribbled wide, and
crazy.
He'd had a sort of go at the ref and got booked for dissent there. And then he just this one was just mental.
Just
really.
Hauled back Penny, didn't he?
Penny was going, only like, I say, it was
5 minutes later,
72 minutes, 3-0 down at home, and Penny it was on the halfway line, and he just sort of just broke away and just dragged him down, and it was crazy, but I think he's been booked in nearly every game he's played so far for Gillingham. But
I think they said he's been booked pretty much every game, and I think this might be second red. I think so.
Blimey. Well, it was so stupid. It's the sort of one that would have a manager pulling his hair out. Oh yeah, so this is his record. So basically, booked in the league, booked, not booked, two yellow sent off, booked, booked, not booked, booked, two yellow sent off. So it's. Two reds and seven yellows in 9 games.
I think ill-disciplined, young man. Yeah. Ill-disciplined.
Next time he gets a booking, he's getting hooked, isn't he? Once it'll be, spoiler alert, it'll be a different manager, though. Chaplin comes on for the ever-classy Aluko for the final 10 minutes. By this stage, Josie mentioned had removed his poncho in time for the heavens to open once more. And with the rain coming down, Piggott goes down in the box following an overhit corner by Evans. First watch, we thought this was a little bit harsh, didn't we, Joe?
Well, like, it just seemed that Piggott was getting nowhere near the ball. So
6-1.
Yeah. It's sort of one of those ones where you just think, I don't know why he'd bother giving it because he's getting nowhere near the ball. But then when you actually see the replay from the sort of TV angle, which has got the rest viewpoint in it, he does just chuck him down on the floor for no reason. It's just a total lack of discipline that they were showing at that point. So I think Piggott wanted the penalty, but Chaplin had scooted across there first and picked the ball up, hadn't he? So,
yeah. What was it? Matt Ritchie on David Johnson? Who was it?
Paul Ritchie.
Yeah, body slam.
Paul Ritchie.
Reasonably similar, although Matt
not
Ritchie
quite as dramatic.
Matt Ritchie physically picked Johnson up and yeah. threw him to the floor, basically. Yeah. But yeah,
wasn't a penalty though.
That's Barry Knight.
Yeah.
We wondered whether Piggott might take this one, but Chaplin grabbed the ball. He's obviously the penalty taker now. Norwood isn't on the pitch. When he's on, puts it straight down the middle. Decent penalty. An enjoyable 4-0 win, made even more enjoyable perhaps by the fact that Steve Evans walked the day after the game. Didn't look like a team playing for the manager ultimately, did it?
It looked very, when you look at the red card and you look at the penalty in the last minute, it's just two schoolboy errors. And like I say, for love or hate Steve Evans, and I know most people aren't a big fan of his, but ultimately he's a manager that knows how to set a side up at this level to motivate a side. And generally, you know what to expect from his side. They're going to be tough to play against. They're going to be very good at the basics. And they're not going to give you an easy game. And that was an easy game yesterday. And part of it is because we looked very good, but they didn't make it particularly difficult for us. And it looked like I said, I'd commented, I'd never seen a Steve Evans side play that sort of just weakly, really. And it's no surprise to me that he's walked out today. I know they've had a lot of issues this season with sort of backing. I think he wanted the Stevenage job when that came up because I think it's closer to home. And I think he's just maybe run his course with Gillingham after sort of two 10th place finishes in League One. I think he's sort of punched that ceiling. I don't think he can get past it with them and wants a fresh start. And like I say that they need something major or they're going to be getting relegated this season because they were a very, very poor side.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Do you wish him well, Dave? Where do you think he'll pop up next?
He'll pop up somewhere. As Joe said, he does know how to organise teams and get results. I mean, you know, not blessed with huge finances, Gillingham, and two 10th place finishes is probably fairly decent for them in the last couple of seasons.
Well, bear in mind, we finished 11th and 9th for those two.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, as I said earlier, you know, compare the match, just compare the intensity and the aggression they showed in the match against us last season to yesterday. All right, we've got a completely different squad of players and better players. But even so, it was just a lack of, just not competitive, were they? I mean, they were nowhere near it. Although we did play well, don't get me wrong. We have got players that, given the room, we'll do that to teams. But goodness me, it was almost, first half, it was just almost so easy, wasn't it? Which is very, very unlike, as Joe said, very unlike his team. And they did
tighten up a little bit in the second half, but again, you know, showed that ill discipline. So when that came through this afternoon, Mikey, I wasn't hugely surprised. We all had a good chuckle at it at the at Felix, though. But he'll appear somewhere else, no doubt.
He'll be back.
Yeah.
Health pending, perhaps. So moving on to the other results, there was only four other League One matches. The most entertaining one and the headline one was Wickham 3, Sunderland 3.
I watched that game. That was on at lunchtime. What a game that was. Flipping it.
So, yeah, talk us through what happened in that game then.
Oh, Dave. My God. Hang on. Sunderland won. Sunderland went 1 up. Wickham went 2-1 up. Hang on. Sunderland went up 2-1, 2-2. Sunderland 3-2. And then Joe Jacobson, who basically, I don't know if you saw it on the EFL on Quest, made the best goal line clearance I think I've ever seen. One of them. Incredible. To keep it, I think, at 3-2, I believe that was. Maybe not. Maybe it was 2-2 then. And then he pops up. They sort of use a bit of Wickham shithousery, corner at the last, everybody up, Stockdale up in the box, good old Ainsworth, Stockdale up as well. And the ball hung in there, centre half gets a win, and Jacobson is blocked on the line, and Jacobson sort of stabs it in 97th minute, I think, for 3-0. Yeah, cracking game though, really good. Not great quality. I tell you, he did look good. That Pritchard for Sunderland looked good. Certainly second half, he looked really good. But yeah, that Stewart, probably a bit unlucky. I'm not sure they gave him a hat trick. First goal, he had a really good header for 1-0 really early on, about 3 minutes. And it's one of those ones, hits a crossbar, looks like it comes back over the line, but doesn't. Hits a crossbar and hits Stockdale just in front of the line and goes in. So, yeah, a bit of a robbed of a hat trick. But, yeah, a good game, that one. Very good.
Lovely stuff. And the other results, Accrington 1, Milton Keynes 1, Cheltenham 1, Burton 1, and Oxford lost 2-0.
Yeah.
At Lincoln, Joe, the results might not matter to us too much, but they are starting to go our way, aren't they?
Well, I think over the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks in League One, sort of every time I've looked at it, it seems that every team above us, when they've played, has dropped points in each fixture almost. There's no one seems to be on a good run at the moment. And when you look at Oxford, when they're playing Lincoln, have been quite a poor side this season. And that now puts us back, same amount of games played as Oxford, 8 points behind them, and they're gonna have to be the target, aren't they? That's what we've got to go for, and we've still got to play them. And I say you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but you look at the next run of 5 or 6 fixtures, and there's some winnable games there. And if we can, we're gonna know within that 6-game run whether this season's gonna just peter out to nothing, or whether there's gonna be something riding on it by the time we get to sort of April, May time.
Indeed. So just on that, it's just Rotherham, Wigan and Plymouth who are above us that have won their last game. So
Wigan are incredible. I've got it here. Wigan, I mean, so incredible. They got like, game, I mean, as we all say, better to have games, points on the board. But crikey, they've got 4 games in hand. They're only a point behind Wickham and, 5 points, I think, behind Sunderland, with 4 games in hand, for goodness sake.
Their chairman's come out today and said that the league should be being extended for health reasons for the players.
But I
don't think he'll get anywhere with that.
I don't think he will either, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
And they had a decent FA Cup result as well, didn't they, Wigan?
I don't know, I missed it.
You know, they won, yeah. Well, they're still in the hat, I saw.
Yeah, well, they must have won then if they're still in the hat. Because
there's no replay. So, they won.
What about that Barrow game, for Christ? That's what we would have been up at Barnsley, witnessing a 5-4. Goodness me.
And Barrow were down to 10 men for most of the game.
Oh, it's crazy.
I've got the FA Cup results in front of me. But, yeah, some brilliant
matches. 6 goals in 15 minutes, wasn't it?
Cambridge winning at Newcastle. Jack Lancaster having a late goal disallowed by VAR.
Yeah.
But great for Jack to get that sort of win under his belt there.
They didn't even show that, did they? I didn't see it on Match of the Day.
No, I didn't see it on Match of the Day.
But... No.
And unless I'm mistaken, his name was left off the graphic as well. Poor lad, if he stayed up to... I mean, I'm sure they were out for a few beers after that performance, but... If he recorded Match of the Day, he might have been slightly disappointed. But yeah, just running through that top 10. So yeah, we're 15 points behind Rotherham, who are top on 50 points, same as Sunderland. Wickham moved up to third with that draw. So they're third and they are 11 points ahead of us. Then it's Wigan on 45, Oxford 43, Plymouth 43. So we're probably looking at Oxford and Plymouth as the teams that we could potentially rein in. And we're 8 points behind both of them. Plymouth have a game in hand on us, but Oxford have now played the same amount of games that we have. And I think that we play Oxford away in March. So fingers crossed, that'll be a really big game rather than...
There's some corkers coming out. I mean, Portsmouth's in, is it late February, is it? I can't remember when that is, but they're a couple of points ahead of us, but with two games in there. Mm. Yeah. All, as Joe said, these next four or five games are the way we're playing, are clearly winnable. How often we've said that before, clearly winnable games. I mean, if you win four of those games, you're going to be, surely going to be making some ground there.
Mm. That's all we can do, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all we can do. Look after business.
Need a Burley-esque, what was it, 97-98 20 game unbeaten run or whatever it was.
We seem to have the firepower. It was that season when we kept scoring five. This season we've scored four a few times already, haven't we?
Mm. Yeah.
Three times away from home.
Yeah. Lovely stuff.
Yes. 10th in the league.
Happy days. Let's move into the questions. And Tim Gornell is first up. How strange does it feel to watch a well-coached Town team, Joe?
Well, especially, I thought it takes like 30 games for a team to gel. I didn't think I didn't think you're allowed to sort of look good this quickly. And it's amazing how quickly we've looked. We've looked like a well-drilled side, and it's also incredibly frustrating that we've had all this talent in the squad and we've put in such poor performances throughout the season, especially when we've been ahead in games. The amount of points we've dropped from winning positions, it's stupid. And like I say, the fact we're sitting there thinking, oh, well, if we can win five out of the next six, then we've got a chance of being in the mix for the playoffs is just diabolical, really, isn't it, when you see the investment in the squad and what we've done. But I say it's early days, but I think McKenna seems the right man to lead this squad, and this good start is helping him, and there's going to be some blips along the way, and I'm sure that it's just unavoidable. But we do just seem like we know what we're doing both on and off the ball, and we seem flexible. It's just so nice to hear him talking at the end of each game, and he's already talking about the sort of what they've done for this game and what we're already looking at Bolton next week, and they've got their different challenges and how we are adapting to each game. And Wes Burns coming out in his post-match interview saying that we knew we were going to be getting man-to-man marked a lot, so we've done a lot of work around how to beat the sort of man-to-man marking and work from there. And it's just what we've sort of wanted as fans, isn't it? I'm sure most people who listen to the pod and sort of listen to it because they like to see the sort of tactical side of the game and what we as fans want to see and want to hear, rather than just the sort of the real football man talk of Paul Cook, Paul Lambert, Mick McCarthy before him, of just like fans couldn't possibly understand this game we're talking about. So we're not going to give you any extra detail, but McKenna just seems confident enough in his own skin that he's just going to tell us what we're going to do and we're going to work from there and deal with it, basically.
And I think in contrast to the others, who obviously we all know, Mr. Lambert, Mr. Cook used to refer very much, but sometimes, well, certainly Paul Lambert back to his playing days, I really haven't seen McKenna come out and talk much about his time spent with Mourinho or Solskjaer or anyone like that. Have you particularly? Mm-hmm. You know, it's all been about him, what he's, you know, how he's going to take things forward with us. I think it's probably these postponements in his early weeks has helped him, because obviously it's given him much more time on the, you know, much more time on the training ground. So that's certainly been an assistance, and certainly looks like he's paying dividends, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's helped in one way, but it also has heaped pressure on in others, because obviously you've got that long run up to the Wickham game, which we then won. But had we not won that Wickham game, there'd have been a huge run up of pressure building up to this game. So whilst the time has helped him, it's also only helped because he's got the results to go alongside it, which has meant that the sort of pressure stayed off that way. And I'll get him sort of Rich to tweet for the Blue Monday account, but I was watching a video last week on Tifo's channel, which is always a good watch, about the sort of tactical periodization which Jose Mourinho is sort of probably the most famous for, but something that Bobby Robson was one of the first people to use, but Jose Mourinho used it. And it's about how basically everything is built towards each game. Each session is done that you don't do specific fitness session. Everything is built around your next game and your game after that and the overall picture of it. And it's only a sort of 6 or 7 minute video, but I think McKenna, having worked under Mourinho, I'd imagine is a proponent of this. So it's sort of probably interesting for fans to watch. So I'll get Rich to tweet that out.
Excellent. Look forward to watching that, Joe. Peck and Blue asks, Dave, when was the last time we played well after having had time on the training ground? I don't expect you to have an answer to hand, but it always used to feel like that never happened.
No, it didn't. You know, you're building up for games and it never always used to sort of fall flat. You know, I don't know, you'd had a postponement or something like that. Well, at least it gives us more time to work with the players and stuff. Mm. But, yeah, I think Joe just sort of summed that up pretty well. Yes, I think it has. It's certainly helped having time on the training ground. But yeah, it also helped that you got the positive. You now got two. Well, certainly the positive result coming out of Wickham, and obviously a very good performance yesterday. So, and no, and again, it's going forward. It's going to have clear weeks now. Don't there's a midweek game this month? Is there? Don't think there is.
We've got Wimbledon,
yeah. Right at the end of the month, isn't it? Mm. I think. Yeah. So. Yeah, he's going to have even more time to work with the players, so can he only will. Be a benefit.
And so, sort of staying on the Kieran McKenna loving, how many games like that can we get totally overexcited about McKenna, Joe? I think we probably already are overexcited.
Yeah,
but for him to really show he's the real deal, we probably do need to.
But we are getting 90-minute performances out, and that's just not something we've seen for a long time as Ipswich fans, is it? And
yeah.
When was the last time he looked good? And it's probably, you're probably going back to sort of like 2014-15, where we actually had a long sustained run of good form, playing well every week. And after that, it was sort of a bit patchier, wasn't it, in the Championship under Mick. And we'd sort of do enough to pick up points but we obviously had a smaller budget, so we weren't able to dominate games like we did. And under Lambert, our good runs were generally sort of a little bit fortunate, it felt at the time. Yeah, and under Cook, we could never string two performances together. We couldn't string two halves together, let alone two performances. So it I don't know, it does feel very, very good at the moment, but also there's a sort of trepidation of
Ipswich Town, isn't it?
Things,
Ipswich Town.
We can't have nice things as Ipswich Town fans, so when's it going to go wrong?
Yeah, I think the Gillingham were not great yesterday. We've got to say that. I know his old cliche, and only beat what is front of it, but it's been two quite different performances. I mean, one, how often have we said, we all said that, how often have we looked forward to a game, quite a big game, 25,000 in against Wickham, you know, big real expectation, and been absolutely crap. But, you know, we ground that result out. I think we played quite well on the night, not nearly as well, I don't think, as we played yesterday, but that was a real grind, that result. And that was a great base to build from. And I think we just, you know, moved it up a level yesterday, didn't we?
Yes, back-to-back clean sheets as well, which isn't something we've really struggled this year defensively, haven't we? And we haven't really been troubled in the two games against Wickham. Sort of, there's a sort of couple of half chances at the end,
but not much.
Yesterday, considering we were 3-0 up so early, normally in those games you expect the side that's lost to end up having more shots because the team that's won just sit back and allow the other team to take pot shots. But we just dominated like the ball as well as possession. They had absolutely nothing, did they?
No, nothing at all. Harry Mallett has hammered in four questions into his tweet. They are all on the same subject. First up, is it now difficult to change that starting 11 moving forward? Are Fraser, Salina and Chaplin all vying for Aluko's position? Could Harper suit Morsi's role in the side and getting forward more? I guess that's preempting Morsi getting suspended at some point. And where does Edwards fit in now? A wing back or a wide forward? Let's start on Edwards. Could you maybe see him play that wing back role if needed, if Burns needs a rest?
I think that's probably the only
left
position.
Maybe?
Mm. Yeah, or maybe on the left, but
because he has been he has given decent protection when he's played as a wide forward, hasn't he? He does.
I mean, imagine if he can get him playing and getting an end product from him. Goodness me. I mean, he's got so much talent. You know, we've seen it, haven't we? We've seen it all season in glimpses. You know, he can just beat players for fun. He can beat players both ways, beat players for pace. And it's just been his very frustrating end product. So if you get that right, you got an incredible player there.
I suppose
there,
when you look at the way we played against Wickham, was a sort of 3-4-3, wasn't it? That he fits into that side
yeah,
more,
he does.
But into yesterday's side, he doesn't really, unless he's going to play left wing back, which
you're not going to
would be asking a lot, isn't it?
You're not going to leave Aluko out. Aluko's just been a complete and a revelation, hasn't he? Incredible.
So yeah, on that Aluko one, because you'd imagine he probably can't play 90 minutes, three games in a week when we do get to that stage. So are Fraser, Salina and Chaplin all vying for that position? I actually think probably for Chaplin and Salina, for me, their best chance of getting back into the team is if one of Norwood or Bonn picks up an injury or a niggle.
Yeah. I think it'll be Salina or Aluko personally, and then maybe Chaplin into that sort of front player side. Yeah. But people are going to pick up injuries.
Can you see Fraser leaving?
Yeah.
If someone comes in for him, yeah.
I think there was talk
that Russell Martin at Swansea is in for him. I personally think if we could pick up the wash our face of the sort of deal, as in they just pay what we've paid, they pick up his contract. I think he'd probably go personally. Whether that will happen, I don't know, but he just didn't fit into a Paul Cook formation at all. He's obviously a good player, but I know Rich has sort of been beating the drum for him a little bit this year, but for me he just hasn't shown enough sort of mobility wise and hasn't affected enough games for me. But that's not to say he couldn't. I think if you played him in the role that Aluko played in yesterday, I think he'd probably play quite well there, just sort of maybe dropping a little bit deeper, giving Morsi a little bit of help and those two going. But I think you're going to struggle to knock Morsi and Evans out of the team and those two.
Technically a good player, you're right. Yeah, but just lacks that, perhaps not the paciest, is he, sort of thing.
So. Yeah. It's going to be McKenna, isn't it? Sort of working out which players he needs, which players he doesn't, and then sort of letting Mark Ashton know and trying to get some deals done, trying to get a couple out, get a couple in so that the balance of the squad gives him what he needs to be flexible enough to play the way he wants to play.
Is Salina actually back? Is Salina training now?
Yeah, he's training.
Yeah.
But he wasn't on the bench yesterday. So.
No, he wasn't. No, it was Fraser, was he?
No.
Fraser's not been involved for a little while, and I don't know if he's been injured or just out of favour.
Mm.
That's the here and now. Dave Gort's already looking ahead to next season. Will George Edmondson still be here on the first game of next season? So I guess he's going from the viewpoint that we will still be in League One at the start of next season. Do you think
he signed a 4-year contract, hasn't he? So what? And I'm sure we're paying him a good wage, a sort of lower end Championship wage. So the only way he's going to go is if a top Championship club comes in with big money for him. And when teams do that, it's hard to stand in players' ways, isn't it? Especially when we're being run by a pension fund and player trading is obviously a big part of that. If somebody comes in with a $6 million bid for him in the summer, if he carries on the way he's playing and fires up the table and we just miss out for whatever reason, then I think sometimes you lose those players. But I think with the long contract and the no doubt good contract he's on, I think if I was to back now whether he's here or not, I'd say yes, he will be.
Nice music to my ears. Mullet asks, Dave, do you think that was shop window time for either Jackson or Piggott, or is there a way back for everyone under McKenna? He said he'd make tweaks on the pitch, but what about this window?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, you know, we've already seen that, although I suppose McGreal first brought him back into the, you know, back into the fold. Jackson, I think we're all surprised Jackson does keep, he's obviously showing in training because he keeps appearing on the bench and he keeps making little cameo appearances. Had a slight chance, yeah, but a good team score yesterday. Scuffed one yesterday, didn't he? Piggott is an interesting one, isn't he? Again, there's been sort of one or two rumours I've seen about him particularly, perhaps in the window. It's just finding a role for Piggott. Obviously, yeah, the role for me for Piggott is, especially in the front two, is, as you said, either him or Chaplin coming in if either one or Bonn or Norwood drops out now. But clearly, Bonn and Norwood have got the shirts now, and it's up to Piggott to win one for himself. But again, difficult. I could understand why he wanted to take the penalty yesterday. Goodness me, but he didn't really show too much when he came on yesterday, did he? Really?
No. I think everyone was sort of willing him to
score. Yeah, I was.
I forgot to mention Morsy hit the bar in the last minute, didn't he? I forgot.
If you look at League One, sort of on the assumption that we're in League One next season, well, James Norwood has been on a transfer list, and I think that's a club hierarchy decision. Would we be giving him another contract? Possibly not. Would we sign McCauley Bon if we're still in League One? Probably not, I don't think. And then Joe Piggott's the guy with 2 years left on his contract, yep, and is a player that probably will play a role next season. So I don't see that we'd be able to ship him out, because we've obviously given him a good deal to sign here when he had interest from Championship clubs, interest from Celtic in the summer, and we signed him on a three-year deal on no doubt a very nice wage. So I don't see that there's any real market for him at the moment, and it's in our interest to get the only striker on our books who's contracted into next season firing. So I'm sure we will try and do that.
And you'd hope that someone like McKenna, new coach, new ideas, can get more out of him.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Paul Westlake asks, with that sort of dominant performance, should we be looking for cover in the transfer window, or do you think we still have gaps? Walton would be the biggest signing we should go after for me.
I suppose when you look at it, I guess it's a case of sort of you go through each position, don't you? And in goal,
I'll throw in Alex Hare's question as well. Is left back still a priority position to strengthen, or is it about making the loans permanent? So they're the two questions on the table.
Well, let's go through it position by position, yeah, at the moment. In, yeah, goal, Walton is, if we can get him signed, which is going to be tough, but if we can get him signed, him and Hladke, I think that's going to be plenty. Centre-halves, we mentioned earlier in the pod, I think you need at least one backup if you're going to be playing the three at the back, because I don't think NCR is going to be able to cope playing the way that McKenna wants him to.
No.
Right wing-back, sort of Wes Burns, Kane Vincent-Young, left wing-back. Well, It's Coulson, isn't it? Is Coulson going to be here come the end of the window? And if he is, then we probably won't sign another left back. Midfield, I think we're well covered in midfield. I think the number 10, we're well covered. And I think up front, we're well covered, bearing in mind, obviously, there's options that some people go. James Norwood could still go. We don't know exactly what the situation there is. But I think we're well covered as a team. I think we've got enough in the squad. But it's just whether you can just shuffle the pack a little bit, a couple out, a couple in, just to give you a bit more cover where you want it, or a start where you want it. But I don't know. I don't see that we need a huge amount. And I think maybe the sort of McKenna wants these players in, but maybe there's an element of saying, look, win us a few games first and we'll see whether the season's still alive. Because if we lose the next couple, we're probably realistically going to be too far off the playoffs. So what's the point of chucking good money after bad for this season if it's just loan players to get us through till May? Or do you just keep that money in reserve until the summer and then try and recruit permanently at that point?
What about you, Dave? If we were only going to do one bit of business, what would you want it to be?
Oh, a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Clearly the goalkeeper.
Well, on a permanent.
Yeah, oh, goodness me, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, as Joe said, with him and Hladke, you're more than adequately covered there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, who would have thought we'd have said that? One of the 10, well, I would say 10 games ago, he hasn't scored it, but yeah, I mean, he after a shaky start, he just looks the part, doesn't he? He exudes confidence. He comes for crosses, he catches him. Maybe his distribution isn't the greatest, but he's good enough really at that level. So it just gives you confidence, doesn't he? He must, you know, maybe the back, how they're playing with the three at the back now suits him also. They're playing a bit higher up as well. That may suit him also. He just looks the part to me. And I think I saw somewhere that Brighton just signed a young keeper, or extended a contract of a young keeper on their books, I believe.
Yeah, basically Walton is going to be leaving Brighton this transfer window. He's not going to be on loan at Ipswich at the end of the window. He's either going to be signed here permanently, yes, or he's going to be somewhere else, isn't he? Yeah. So
okay,
hopefully, fingers crossed, we stay here because he's been good, isn't he?
Yeah. Really good.
Fingers crossed. We got a tweet from Craig Fimbo from Chelmsford Services. Mm. How has McKenna managed these kind of performances with someone else's squad and without a recruitment room? Hashtag witchcraft. Hashtag Ipswitchcraft.
What is that recruitment room? What is that? Like a surgery? What is that? He lost me there, Mr. Sort of the Cook.
The black room, black box room, isn't this? Sort of, you've seen them at clubs where they have all their signers lined up. I did listen to his that podcast with the Chesterfield guys and the sort of Sky Sports News one, and I don't know. It just seems, like I said, obviously this interview, as we sort of mentioned, isn't aimed at Ipswich fans. It's aimed at the wider game and to keep his name out there and push it on. But it's, I just find it very difficult to understand the him basically saying, I've had a sort of performance team put on me, so I couldn't run pre-season. We didn't have a recruitment room, so we didn't know what we were doing in the market. I didn't have enough say generally, full stop. But yeah, also all those things, and I think they're fair criticism. I think that's not the job Cook signed up for. And to be fair to him, he's come in to do a job, and the job has been made smaller and smaller, and it's there. But I don't see how that ties in with they should have given me more time, because, well, how would you have turned things around if there's things that are already out of your control which you aren't happy about? So you can't square that circle. It seems like he's talking out both sides of his mouth there for
me.
He wants more time, but yet there's things that are fundamentally wrong with the job that he was never going to be able to sort out. So what would more time have achieved? Maybe just giving him a bit of time to be able to sort of politically gain a bit more power back.
He's had to come out with something. And to be fair to him, what it has meant going so early, if you perceive it as early, is not really too much damaged stock, is he? He's not damaged to his rep, really, is there? Not too much, I don't think. He'll pick up somewhere else, of course he will. But he had to come out with something. He did contradict himself slightly, I thought.
And if he said it was going to be instant success, he would have walked out of the job.
Yeah,
and then you signed Sam Morsi, Bert Santolini, and Christian Walton on transfer deadline day. I think that's sort of setting sort of target what we were looking to achieve this year. And it wasn't going to be just a transition season, was it, with those three signings?
No, definitely not. So we'll wrap it up there, gents. Blue Monday will return perhaps with Craig if he's finally back from Gillingham with a midweek Q&A live on our YouTube channel. Rich and Seb will preview Bolton away, potentially live as well on Friday. Anything to plug, either of you, or any last words?
No, I've just finished the Paul Mariner book when I was on holiday. Oh. I managed to get that read, and that was a really good read. And I know Rich has mentioned it a couple of times that we are going to be getting Mark Donaldson back on the pod to launch a book club to go from there.
Yeah.
And so start getting that read if you've got that one, guys, before that, so we can go from there.
Me too. I finished it last week. Yeah, excellent, excellent read. And really, really, you know, people, not really great to see the people in the game, how well he was thought of and how people speak so well of him. Yeah, lovely. Quite a character.
Lovely stuff. Okay. So after scoring 4 goals away from home for the third time this season, Joe, we are still 10th, but onwards and upwards, eh?
Here we go.
Here we go.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.